illuminating, smart talk. This is Bill Bennett's Morning in America.
Good morning. It is Bill Bennett's Morning in America, but Seth Leibson in today, July 1st, 2011, on this heading into the 4th of July weekend. Bill will be back Monday with one of his great 4th of July live shows. You and your calls. We're taking your calls. 866-680-6464. As I was mentioning in the previous segment, one of the great things about summer is reading time. And one of the great public intellectuals in America, Tevi Troy, who many of you know from listening to on healthcare, he's a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute. He did an interesting piece in the Washingtonian on what's known as the quote-unquote Washington Read. These are books that sprout up every couple years, maybe every 5 years, that everyone in Washington tends to talk about, even if not everyone in Washington or those talking about them read them. And they seem to have some kind of effect on public policy. One thinks of Michael Harrington's book on the other America and the war on poverty. One thinks of The End of History and The Last Man, or Bowling Alone, The Rise and Fall of Great Powers, and the Bob Woodward books. Anyway, Tevi penned this piece, and I wanted to get him on today to talk a little bit about that. And talk about something actually I think which is more important, which is what are the most important books that have been written throughout American history that have had a serious impact on public policy, and what are the most important conservative books? So with that introduction, Tevi Troy, welcome. Good morning.
Thanks for having me. You go from this sort of light thing on what people pretend to read to what are the most important books ever. It's kind of a big shift, but I'm ready to talk about it.
It's all kind of related, though, in a way, because it seems to me the Washington Read, as you call it, these other books that don't get read, you know, some have lasting impact, some don't. I would say Bob Woodward's books, I don't know if you would agree with this or not, they don't have lasting impact. They tend to be kind of live wires for about 3 to 5 months, and then people move on and forget. Is that a fair assessment?
It's true in the way that you're saying, but it's not true in a different way, in that Woodward's books can set the conventional wisdom about the perception of a president for a very long time. So Bush at War kind of gave this impression that Bush was much more serious behind the scenes than some of the media portrayals. And so the first book on Bush was very, very positive. Subsequently, Woodward turned around on Bush and kind of joined the bandwagon of people dumping on him. The first book he had on Obama kind of had that sense. It was called Obama's Wars, and that had the sense of Obama dithering, that Obama took a long time to make decisions. And again, that kind of fed into this conventional wisdom and perception of him.
Fair point. But there are other books that are quote-unquote part of the Washington Read, if you will, as you call it, that have had even more lasting impact. I think of the one I've heard about since I was in the fifth grade or sixth grade, maybe, was The Other America. That was Michael Harrington's book, correct?
Yeah, well, that was Michael Harrington's book. He wrote it in the early 1960s, and it was about poverty in America. And it's been called the inspiration for the war on poverty. And, in fact, subsequent editions of the book after the war on poverty began used that tagline to sell the book. But the truth, as I lay out my piece and I've discussed in my book about intellectuals in American politics, is that John F. Kennedy, who kind of started the ball rolling on the war on poverty, even though it really got going under Johnson, had not read the book, but he read a book review in the New Yorker about the Harrington book, and the book review was given to him by his economic aide, Walter Heller. And that is when they started saying, let's start some initiatives to fight poverty. And so this little book by Harrington ended up costing America trillions of dollars because we've kind of fought the war on poverty, and poverty may have won.
And who was Michael Harrington, by the way?
Michael Harrington was kind of a socialist, journalist, provocateur, public intellectual on the left. He actually is the guy who coined the term neoconservative. He meant it as an insult, talking about people like Pat Moynihan and Irving Kristol, people listeners of the show are quite familiar with. And he said with derision in the early 70s, these neo-conservatives. And Irving Kristol, as was his wont, took the insult and made it into a positive.
There you go. We're talking to Tevi Troy, senior fellow at the Hudson Institute. And in a moment, I want people to call in and get in on this conversation about the most important books and the most important conservative books, or the most influential conservative books, because that's a continuing theme on this show. We're about educating, right? So people want to know what books they can give to their children or as gifts or to you know, people who seem, you know, immovably set in their liberal ways, is there a good book that might have them thinking a second time about things? Tevi, what is the most important of those Washington Reed books, those kind of inside the Beltway books? Was it The Other America, or would you argue it was another one?
Well, it's hard to say the most important of the Washington Reed books. I mean, all of them, they're important because they kind of capture a moment.
Yeah.
So, for example, Robert Putnam's Bowling Alone, which I don't think anybody talks about anymore, captured this moment in the 1990s where Clinton was desperate to find a role for government, and this notion of bowling alone gave the sense of, I don't think people went beyond the title, but the sense of atomized, individualized Americans kind of doing their own thing, and Clinton was trying to create some kind of new...
We weren't joining communities, doing things in community form anymore. Right, I remember that. No one talks about that anymore.
Right. And then in the early 90s, the Rise and Fall of the Great Powers by Paul Kennedy captured the sense that America was perhaps entering a period of decline and that Japan was the new rising power. Obviously, and unfortunately, Japan's had its own problems over the last few decades, and that was not true. Now we have a similar attitude, although without the Kennedy book, about the U.S. vis-a-vis China.
Right. And maybe contrary to that book was The End of History and The Last Man, right?
Right. Fukuyama's book really captured a period where there was a sense that after the Cold War, history was over. And history was over in the sense that liberal democracy was proven to be the best system and was going to continue growing. Unfortunately, we've seen in the last decade that while democracy had been making a lot of gains for a long time, we've seen actually some regression, and now there are fewer countries that are liberal democracies than were 5 or 10 years ago.
He said that that basically the conflicts were over and that democracy would triumph and dominate the world. Liberal democracy.
And you know
what he didn't mention in his book?
Yet.
Yeah, do you know what he didn't mention in his book?
What?
Islam.
Yes.
I think that's fascinating. He just totally missed it. Totally missed political Islam.
Right. And if I recall, he's either a student of or a big fan of Samuel Huntington, who clearly has not missed the issue. So
All right, now the interesting part for me, this is all interesting, but the more interesting part for me, what in your world, Tevi, have been the five most influential or important, let's say five conservative books? What books would you recommend to people who want to recommend conservative books?
Well, I'm not going to say the five most, but five great conservative
books.
I think you have to look at the Bible.
Okay.
Sort of set moral standards for the Judeo-Christian world, for Western civilization, and I think it doesn't really need a lot of explanation. I think Whitaker Chambers' Witness was one of the most riveting books I've ever read, and kind of mobilized a notion of how dangerous communism was. And he was somebody who was not only on the left, but was sort of one of in the sort of celebrated intellectual world of the left. And he said, "This is a real danger." And I remember being assigned the book at one point. And I sat and read it one day. I couldn't put it down. Barry Goldwater's Conscience of a Conservative kind of summarized at a very early part of the movement what things would bring conservatives together, because as we know today and we talk about, there are many disparate streams of conservatism, but it was almost one of the best encapsulations of fusionism, this notion that you can bring the different strains together ever.
Barry Goldwater's Conscience, that came out when, like 62, 63?
I thought it was 61, but...
You may be right. You may be right. Okay. But it led the pathway to his campaign for president in 64.
And then Alan Bloom's Closing the American Mind.
Right.
I think, that came out 20 years ago, and America may still be headed to... I don't want to say a bad word because of Mark Halperin's problems on MSNBC, but America may be headed to heck in a handbasket, but at least as a result of that book, we can explain why and understand it.
It's about relativism and how moral relativism has dominated the culture from high to low, from the media to the universities, and that the only truth anymore is that there is no truth, right?
Right, and it leads to a sort of form of moral depravity, how people really have no standards, have no ideals, and if the greatest value is to say that no value is greater than any other values, then you really have nothing.
So you're saying the Bible, Whitaker Chambers' Witness, Conscience of a Conservative by Barry Goldwater, and The Closing of the American Mind by
Alan. I had to add Road to Serfdom by Hayek.
The Road to Serfdom by Hayek.
This explains the encroachment of government on economics, and there was a paperback edition that GIs had in their backpacks after World War II, and it really helped to shape a generation of conservatives and an attitude towards the dangers of encroaching government.
What's interesting is that these books, but particularly in this list, I suppose the Bible always, but Hayek has had a huge comeback after years of being forgotten. His books have gone back onto the bestseller list, in fact.
Yeah, I mean, Hayek's problem, I think, is that he claimed or said he wasn't a conservative, and he really wasn't. He just he understood economics, and he explained from an economic perspective why it was danger to have too much government involvement.
You know what book I was surprised you didn't mention, and it's a book you recommended to me years ago when I was, I don't know, in graduate school or something, and I said, I need a good conservative book. You recommended it to me. I recommend it to everyone. It changed my wife's entire worldview about welfare, and that's Myron Magnett's book, The Dream and the Nightmare.
That is a great book, and that fits more into the policy books that we were going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
It really helped understand why some of the excesses of the 60s trickled down from the upper classes to everybody else, or to lower classes, and had a huge and devastating impact on behavior. What Magnett's argument in a nutshell was that it's fine if the wealthy children of the elite wanted to engage in, let's say, dangerous behaviors or immoral behaviors because they had the economic means to make up for it and actually thrive after potentially. But if everybody engaged in these types of behaviors, and I'm talking about out-of-wedlock births and not getting jobs and drug use and alcohol abuse, these other people didn't have a safety net within their families, and when everybody is doing that kind of thing, and we do have staggering numbers of out-of-wedlock births in this country, that could have a huge and devastating impact on our societal fabric and our economy. And it is a great book, and I think it belongs in the list, certainly in this conversation.
All right, well, I'll tell you what, we're going into a break. If you'll stay with us one more segment, we'll get more into that side of the list, which is books on public policy, conservative books on public policy. We have some callers who want to get in on the conversation. Well, we have room for others. The phone number, if you want to get in on this conversation on books and conservatism, 866-680-6464, 866-680-6464. Seth Liebson in for Bill Bennett this Friday. We'll be back with Tevi Troy. Washes up on our shores. Little Lily and Chinatown sitting there side by side. Live from New York, it's a French kiss, Italian eyes, Spanish moss in the moonlight. Just another American. I'm just another American. It's just another American Saturday.
Daddy didn't like trouble, but if it came along,
engaging, reflective talk. Bill Bennett's Morning in America, 866-680-6464.
Thank you. It is Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Seth Liebson in today, Friday, July 1st, 2011, live from Phoenix, 960 KKNT, and joined by our good friend Tevi Troy, senior fellow at the Hudson Institute. We're talking about books that have had impact on public policy and conservative books that have had impact on the public mind. Tevi, give us a quick list of that other sector of books that hit direct public policy from the conservative angle. Then I'm going to go to calls and have other people share their thoughts.
Yeah, we already mentioned Myron Magnett's The Dream of the Nightmare. But Losing Ground by Charles Murray really made the argument for welfare reform and ended up becoming policy of the land, the welfare reform of the mid-1990s. Another book that was not really written by a conservative, but I think is the best book ever on the unintended consequences of liberal policy initiatives is Common Ground by J. Anthony Lukacs.
Uh-huh.
I remember reading this in my 20s and just being riveted. It was the story of busing in Boston. I remember one of the book blurbs on this book said, calling this study of busing in Boston is like saying Moby Dick is about whaling in New Bedford.
Oh, interesting. And the spelling on that last name, Lukacs, how do you spell that?
I believe it's J. Anthony Lukaas.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, he committed suicide about a decade ago, and I never understood why.
All right.
He's a brilliant writer. But he talks about all of the, I mean, Massachusetts, we know, is a liberal state, all of the kind of liberal voters in suburbs of Boston just couldn't understand why black children were being bused to their schools from their own neighborhoods, and there were all these protests, and people who had always been Democrats their whole lives, probably still are Democrats, just could not understand why this encroachment from Washington was taking place in their state. And it's just a fascinating book.
Any others?
Well, not all conservative. I mean, I came up with some. I mean, we talked about The Other America earlier.
Yeah.
There's some other books kind of in the political realm, like Game Change, which was written by Mark Halperin, whom I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
You know, in trouble. But I mean, that really gave you an unbelievable behind the scenes look at what goes on in a political campaign, and it's kind of like Teddy White's Making of the President series for the Internet Age.
Mm-hmm.
Teddy White used to do these chronicles of each presidential campaign, 1960, 1964. They were always called The Making of the President, and they were trying to be a fly on the wall of a presidential campaign. It was very eye-opening to the American people to see what goes on in a presidential race. And Game Change just had access to so much more information because of the Internet, because people are a lot more open today,
yeah,
and because of greater transparency.
All right, good. Speaking of, let's go to the callers because they've got some interesting ones. Mark in Dallas had a suggestion. Hi, Mark. Good morning.
Hey, Seth, good morning. Glad you're back on the radio, and I'm
Thanks.
One of your thousands, tens of thousands of listeners out there that Bill goes nuts over.
Thank
so,
you.
Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Hey, Judge Bork's book, Slouching Towards Gomorrah, was probably a foundational book for me, and really loved the concept that he brought towards spiritual downfall of the United States.
Slouching Toward Gomorrah by Robert Bork. That was a great book. If I'm not mistaken, Tevi, your family had a little hand in that. Is that correct?
Yeah, my brother Dan was a clerk for Judge Bork and worked on some of the early drafts. Slouching Towards Gomorrah is interesting, though. I mean, it was very influential in the conservative movement. I don't feel like it was read that widely outside conservative circles, and it really had its biggest impact in the 2000 campaign when President Bush, then Governor Bush, made kind of a nasty crack about Bork,
yeah,
saying, "I don't see America as slouching towards Gomorrah," in one of his speeches. And we think that was that line came from Mike Gerson. And they later had to call and apologize to Bork for
I remember Bork had a pretty strong piece in the Wall Street Journal on that I think was maybe one of the strongest pieces I have seen
it
in a long
brutal.
Time. But a good book to give to someone who wants to learn more about the conservative argument, nonetheless. Bill in Littleton, Colorado had one. Go ahead, Bill. Good morning.
How you doing? Good morning.
Thank you.
My book is Liberal Fascism by Jonah Goldberg,
uh-huh,
and I think it's sad that he put that thing on it because the title because I thought it was going to be a polemic, you know, but it turns out I don't think it is. I think it was very balanced, and one thing about it was I read it and finished it a day before I listened to an Obama campaign speech,
uh-huh,
and I turned to my wife and I said, "My God, Obama's Mussolini," because of the way that Goldberg had sketched out Mussolini, who was a great, you know, intellectual,
sure,
really,
sure,
and
sure,
which I never knew. And so there's information in there that's just wonderful.
Jonah Goldberg's Liberal Fascism, Tevi, an important book, no doubt.
Definitely an important book. I agree that the title led a lot on the left to dismiss it, but Jonah's a very close friend of mine, and it's really an impressive piece of work. And the amount of research and reading he did, I told him that the process of writing the book was like a graduate education for him. I mean, he really immersed himself in the sources and showed of why this slur that fascism is something of the right was really not accurate, and that it really has had its impulses on the left.
Impulses and roots on the left, that's,
yes,
right.
Exactly.
Well, we could do this all day, but I want to thank you, Tevi, for spending part of your morning with us, and we'll have this interview up on the website. People can email in with more suggestions, and I'm thinking we're going to have you back to do more of this. People love the topic of books. Tevi Troy, a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute. More information on him and his writings available at BillBennett.com. A lot more coming up. We're going to get into healthcare and education, how they dominate the economy and what we're doing wrong. We're going to get into the threats from Iran. We're going to get into a lot. Stay tuned here on Bill Bennett's Morning in America.
Stand for something or you'll fall for anything. You've got to stand for something or you'll fall for anything.